Hello everyone and welcome back to the IJK podcast. Today I'm joined once again by Anthony Assi, a longtime friend and seasoned technology leader with over 20 years of experience architecting large-scale data centers, HPC AI infrastructure, and cloud platforms. Throughout his career, Anthony has worked with global industry leaders such as Google and Dell, and he currently works at Oracle Cloud, where he focuses on building advanced cloud and AI-driven infrastructure solutions and driving enterprise-wide platform innovation. In this episode, we are going to explore the AI revolution and how it is reshaping work, jobs, skills, and society as a whole. Anthony, it's great to have you back on the show. How have you been?
Thanks for having me, Imad, and nice to be back. So far, so good. You know, we've been all busy with this AI madness and the race for AI supremacy. So, yeah, hopefully we're going to have a nice talk.
Oh, yes. It is happening big time right now. And Anthony, before we get into specifics, how would you explain this AI revolution in simple terms to someone who is not technical?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great question. That's a good introduction also. So far, we've known the information system industry, which was mostly based on computers. And what they did was fast calculation. They empowered the human beings to calculate faster. And they were able to calculate specific tasks, whether those are simple instruction or complex instruction. But the human was instructing them specifically what to do, and they accelerated this computation power. And that was the era over the past 20, 30 years that we've been experiencing. So fast calculators, this was the industry of computers. Today, the AI revolution, and I love how you mentioned, like, it's a revolution. It's not an evolution. It's definitely a revolution. It's augmenting human beings with not fast computers or super fast computers, but with intelligence. So we're enabling intelligence for everybody and augmenting them with new capabilities that increase their intelligence. And that's a massive shift from what we've been experiencing so far to today. And that's why we see a massive race to adopting AI and embracing AI in all the sectors, in all the verticals, in all the business, in personal and professional spaces. And we're going to talk about it later on.
Yes, definitely. It is by all means a big revolution. And if you look back at the early days of the internet, do you see this moment as bigger or just different?
Definitely, like, massively bigger. Different in some ways, but definitely similar. Because what we learn in our industry is that history repeats itself. And so there's going to be a lot of similarities. Let me give you some examples. It's going to be massively larger if we compare to the 1999 when you had to be the first, you had to be, all organization, all companies has to be internet first company. Today, in 2025, you have to be an AI first company. So we see that similarities, all the investments, all the CIO of the organizations, all the CEO of big firms, whether they're in tech or not in tech, they have to be AI first company, and they're massively evaluating and investing in that space. Similar to in the early 2000 and 1999, where companies had to be internet first. They had to embrace the internet. They had to embrace the .com expansion of their business and provide their services through the internet. Today, the same paradigm we're seeing is that they have to embrace AI. Those same corporations and other corporations, they have to be AI first company. Now, one of the differences, though, the internet in the 1999, what started from 1995 to 2000 until the dot-com boom, was the era of information system. It's about empowering information to the user, the era of automation through computers, the automation of services, providing services over the internet. Today, AI is way more stronger and impactful than that. Today, AI is all about intelligence. How can we add intelligence to everything we do, to all the industry we are aware of, to 24/7, day, night, personal, business, every industry will be impacted by AI. And that increase of intelligence, whether it's taking it to the next level of intelligence or introducing intelligence to things that were not smart or not that intelligent, that's a massive paradigm shift from the early 2000.
Yes, yes, definitely. But honestly speaking, do you think most people or the general public is aware of how big this is and how groundbreaking this revolution is right now?
Not at all. I mean, I've been working in this space for many years now. As you said in the introduction, I started my career like building HPC, high performance computers, large scale. And even with all that background, I didn't fully grasp the capabilities of AI and the evolution of what AI will bring to our humanity until I started digging more and more, having hands-on experience, building, prototyping, developing tools and technology, whether it's on my business time or on my personal time on the weekends, until I fully grasped those capabilities and what is ahead of us. And most importantly, at the speed of evolution, the speed of innovation, the speed of disruption. Up to a few years ago, disruptions were happening once every decade, maybe. And then you had those big consulting firms would come with their massive transformation programs, how to transform your business. You know, they lay out projects. I've worked on one massive healthcare transformation project for a Fortune 5 company. It took us 18 months to do the whole transformation with an army of consulting firms and tech services companies. With AI, the velocity, the scale, the rapidity of this adoption is 10x, 20x faster. We don't have time to bring in those consulting firms to educate us, etc. We have to embrace it today. And the faster we fully embrace AI into our organization, into our business models, into our customer-facing services, the faster, the more relevant we stay in the market and the higher growth our business will experience.
Yes, I see. If you may, let's now talk a little bit about the impact of AI on jobs and skills in the market. So in your view, which types of roles are most likely to be like disrupted first?
I like how you frame it in a sense, disrupted first, because all jobs will be disrupted. There's some will be massively disrupted in the early days of AI, which we are experiencing. And keep in mind, we're at the bottom of the AI innovation. We're at the bottom early days of the AI innovation and disruption, how you framed it. So all jobs will be disrupted. All industries will be disrupted. But which ones will come first? What we're going to look at, which technologies of AI are massively adopted today and are at a place of adoption that are pretty providing premier quality and efficient and reliable. We're going to talk about generative AI, which is very known to all of the public, and most of our audience will be extremely familiar with it. So generative AI tackles anything that has repetitive cognitive tasks. So any task that has repetition and cognitive capabilities, so with intelligence. So let's say you're searching through documents, you're rewriting documents, you are a paralegal at a legal firm, who you're analyzing existing cases, extracting key data points. You're a software engineer writing code. You are generating new lines of codes based on knowledge. You're integrating with existing APIs or third-party softwares. You're developing an ecosystem that consists of integration with multiple microservices spread across different environments and locations. These, while they require intelligence, but they're very repetitive and cognitive, and we can predict them, and we can know the state that is classified as a positive state, a successful state, versus a negative or not good state. And so for these tasks, they'll massively be disrupted. So anything that touches a keyboard and a mouse, we can easily do repetitive capability using the LLM models and the capabilities of generative AI. But the second phase of that wave of AI adoption will be physical AI. And physical AI is the world where we start to see the early days of physical AI. We're more focused on the generative AI today, but we start to see this early innovation in physical AI. And in physical AI, we're going to see some of the human physical labor that requires physical interaction and physical activity. And even that space is going to be massively disrupted pretty soon with the adoption of those physical capabilities. Now, back to your question, which jobs are mostly at risk? Anything that is repetitive cognitive task, anything that is junior entry level task, even some senior level task requires repetition, repetitive cognitive capabilities. But we also gonna have, we're gonna be introducing new capabilities, new opportunities on the market. I'll give you an example. You and I, early days when we started our, when we were graduating, one of the things we had on our resume that the generation before us didn't had was, you know, you probably had this on your resume, like mastering Excel sheet, mastering Microsoft Office, right? We were showcasing our capability to master mathematical function in a spreadsheet tool, right? That the generation before us, that generated maybe a decade before us, didn't had or didn't see the need to just add mastering Excel. Today, everybody master Office Suite. And so it's not a new capability. It goes without saying. And to mimic that in today's era, we're going to see new people now graduating and putting on their resume mastering prompt engineering. It's a new skill that didn't existed when we graduated. Now, it wasn't something you'd put on resume, prompt engineering. Like, what is that? We didn't know about it. But the new graduates or even the new people who are updating their resume, they all might, some of them will be updating their resume by stating that, hey, prompt engineering is a new skill I master. And that's the point. Some jobs are at risk, in risk, not for complete. Some will be like, I wouldn't say vanish. That's too risky or too strong. But some will be transformed. And new jobs will be created, massive new opportunities in the job market related to AI. AI should be seen as your companion in life, as a tool, not as a threat. Whoever adopts AI in their career are the ones who are going to grow and become stronger and more demanded in the job market. Those who see this as a threat and treat it as one will be seeing losing market share and vanishing over time. Back to your question, jobs will be created, other jobs will be transformed.
Yeah, you mentioned prompt engineering. I've read recently an article that says even that skill is now no longer very relevant because the models have become are becoming so good that they are able to guess in a way exactly what you have in mind when you ask them a question or when you prompt them. What do you have to say about that?
Exactly. Your statement is correct. I would add to it, at what cost? Yes, it can be fulfilled by the machine, but at what cost? The backend capabilities that you need to implement, that you need to invest into in order to offer that capability that you mentioned, come at an extremely high cost. And that's something I deal with on my professional day-to-day job. Building those AI clustered infrastructure, designing the next generation rack solution, the interconnectivity between the racks, building those full stack AI that's going to run on those GPU, today it comes at an extremely high cost. To give you an example, and if you look back in the internet adoption early 2000, to be on the internet, you probably could needed three things. One thing, you need a domain name that costs around $10 a year. There was still a consistent cost. 20 years ago, it was $10. 15 years ago, it was maybe $14. But it's in that range. It's accessible to a large population. Not to everybody, but to a large population. You needed a domain name for $10, and you need a web hosting somewhere, right? Back in the days was GoDaddy, then later transformed with AWS and the rest. Yeah, you'd spend around $100 a year maybe, and that cost kept going down, but still, it's around in the $100 to $200 a year over the past 20 years. That's it for your cost to embrace and adopt the infrastructure to run and deliver your services of .com. With AI, we're talking 100x higher budgets. We're talking things that are not accessible to everybody. Even the tech-savvy people, unless they are in the space of AI and infrastructure for AI, it's not that accessible. Plus, the budget required for that. I mean, we're talking thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars for investment to enable those capabilities. And we're just talking inferencing. If you want to talk training to create those models, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars. And we've seen it over the past couple of months, just few quarters, how these unimaginable investment numbers we're hearing about in our industry to unblock AI. And that tells you it's not something that comes easy, accessible to everybody.
Yes, yes, yes. I see. I understand. So from everything you said, it looks like as well that AI will mainly hit white collars rather than blue collars because physical AI is not yet there, you said, right? This is what you were saying earlier. So people who work in consulting companies, people who work in at the junior level in software development companies as well will be the most the people the most impacted by this revolution.
You know, AI is one of those technology that's not going to differentiate between white collar and blue collar. AI is going to come strong at everything they're going to see in front of it. Everything. By everything, I really mean like the whole industry. This is one of the, if you know, I laugh when I hear some people saying, oh, AI is a bubble. Oh, it's a bubble. It's a hype. It's a hype. It's a hype. Usually those are people who don't have the technical expertise or the full understanding of the capabilities of these technologies. AI is not a hype. You know, in humans, we always create some bubbles. Some companies in AI are creating their own bubbles, but other companies in AI, they're not creating the bubble. They're revolutioning whatever we're going to see for the next 100 years. It's going to be a standard, right? So back to your question, this revolution will hit both parties. There's going to be no differentiation. And we've seen it in the last round of layoffs recently, like the recent layoffs, Amazon laying off 13,000 people. There was no differentiation about warehouse workers, software engineers on the desk. There was no differentiation. Physical AI that's going to hit the majority of the blue collar, the adoption of it comes at a later stage. We haven't adopted it yet. Some enterprises have adopted it in specific key locations or niche businesses, but the large scale general public adoption, we're not there yet. It's going to come pretty fast over the next couple of quarters, year or two max, and it's going to hit everybody. I'll give you an example.
Is robotics a typical example of physical AI or not?
Absolutely. Robotics, let's take a good example. One of the widely adopted physical AI today is the self-driving cars, okay? And let me tell you how this is going to impact all businesses and how it's going to create an unbalance in the world. So if we take today, I live in San Francisco. We've had Waymo, self-driving car from Google for many years now, and I've been taking it for a while. And you compare that to the traditional world with, let's say, the Uber or the Lyft of the world, where you have a human being driving you and getting you from point A to point B. What a lot of people don't know is for the same ride going from point A to point B, today Waymo, a self-driving car, charges more money for that same ride. We're talking 40%, at least until today. And I've been doing this analysis on a regular basis. So they charge 40% more for a self-driving car. People were assuming that, oh, with self-driving car, the cost will be lowered. No, because what I was mentioning earlier, the cost, the CapEx investment, the OpEx to run these vision model, those large language model, those AI requires extremely expensive hardware at the back end, which is a GPU, right? And there's multiple key players, but by far the most dominant player is NVIDIA. Mm-hmm. And so to pay for those technologies, somebody has to pay for it. Like at the beginning, they might give it a discount to gain market shares, but quickly they're going to realize, hey, we can't offer these for-profit corporations, they can't offer a service at loss on a long term for a large population. They have to amortize the cost of their investments. So for those reasons, they're going to have to pass on the cost to the end user, to the consumer. So what's going to happen, Imad? The user, let's say I'm a writer. I'm a writer in that transportation business. I'm going to end up paying more, okay? The driver who used to be a physical driver, his revenue is going to go down because he's not driving. So for those who were able to unblock these new opportunities, they can't. They're not going to have the revenue. They're going to have to find an alternative jobs. So these two individuals or households will earn less, or either they'll be spending more or earning less. And these big corporations, over time, they're going to announce better quarter-over-quarter earnings. They're going to beat their expectation because those additional streams of revenue, they're going to increase the cost over time, etc. And so that's going to create this unbalance of, hey, are you a provider of AI services and then your business will grow? Or are you a dependent on AI services and your business might have to see a shift in their books in terms of revenue and profitability? And so that's why I was saying earlier, it's all about, are you adopting it as a tool for you, or are you depending on it or seeing it as a threat, etc.? And that's going to create an unbalance. And that's what's causing this race to AI supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, thank you for this example. I think now it's pretty clear what you mean by physical AI, and you know, I like the example that you provided with Waymo, and you've compared it to Uber. By the way, I've never been in a self-driving car yet. It probably did not reach the Canadian market yet, or probably it has, but I haven't been in one. But in all cases, going back to what we were discussing earlier, Anthony, if we talk about new graduates, especially those who come from the computer science sector or who are pursuing a computer science major, what skills actually now matter today, given this big disruption from AI?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So for the computer science track or computer engineering track, the fundamentals still hold true, okay? So programming language, computer architectures, network, design patterns, software engineering, conceptual basics, databases, they still hold true. But there are specific things that we know now are breakthrough and that are key for the AI and ML market landscape. And Python is now the dominant language of anything that is related to AI and machine learning. Okay, so Python is by far the dominant language in that space. So Python is that core skills that everybody in computer science should master. And specifically, Python is just a programming language by itself. You need additional frameworks and libraries. So that's now we move to the second part of what they need to master, which is the machine learning frameworks. And there's two major frameworks, which are TensorFlow and PyTorch. And these are two key machine learning frameworks that people has to master in their, let's say, that end of year projects, final year projects. They must build things with those two frameworks, with either or, etc. They must master NVIDIA's CUDA, parallel programming libraries, distributed systems. And then there's other things in fundamentals they still hold very true. Security and cybersecurity is one of these tracks in computer science that is here to stay. Even with the full adoption of AI, and even once we get to AGI capabilities, security will be more and more required. Security will evolve to a level of complexity that we wouldn't have in this world enough security experts to provide us or fulfill those protection capabilities that enterprises are looking for.
Yes, absolutely.
Another thing is big data. You know, with AI now, it's generating data at a velocity that we've never seen. And we're going to need more and more big data scientists to deal with. Now, they'll leverage the AI capabilities to augment their capabilities, but we need big data analysts that are able to contextualize the real life world by the time we hit AGI and the capabilities are there, which we have many years before. And one of the most important fundamentals I'm a big fan of, and is here to stay, and it's going to be needed more with the AI and ML landscape, was mathematics, algebra, analytical calculus. Mathematics is the key foundation of AI and machine learning, and it's going to be extremely demanded today and for the next foreseeable future.
Okay, okay. Do you think universities are adapting quickly enough to prepare students for this new AI reality? I mean, given all the skills that you just mentioned now, are the curriculum or curricula in universities reflecting these shifts in AI requirements?
They are not, and they cannot, right? Universities fundamentally are designed in a model that takes time to propagate specific new industry. It's more risk averse than fast adopters. They cannot adapt fast enough. And it's very difficult fundamentally. They can introduce specific types of courses, leveraging, let's say, adjunct professors from the industry experts, but they can't adapt that fast. You know, it takes decades to transform a curriculum to a new one. They can introduce specific things. They are heavily regulated. They have processes that have been here for a while. There's staff, professor, faculty that has specific targets, objectives, mission statements. And unfortunately, what I'm seeing today in the industry is that, because I'm also a professor for graduate, is that students are using this GPT capability to empower, increase their intelligence when doing their assignments. And so when doing those assignments, they are increasing drastically their intelligence using those GPT capability and generative AI. And so the professor are ending up grading GPT, and they're not grading the students themselves. So what's happening in our industry, and that's going to be a big cause of massive, like, you know, crisis. Once we hit a big crisis, and there's going to be the bubble pop of some of the AI growth we're seeing today, it's going to be due because of this model where professors have been grading GPT, everybody's getting an A, right? You grade GPT, you're going to get an A. Everybody's getting an A, everybody graduates, all the students graduate with an A, and guess what? We're creating an industry of workers, of new workers, freshly graduate, where the majority is not an A, but we have a perception that they are an A. So the day when the machine is going to start evaluating them or dictating or creating the plan of who to keep, who to lay off, well, they're not going to pass because the machine is going to grade them directly and not they're going to grade themselves. And it's going to create a big problem in the near future until the whole industry transform. But it's not even transformation. It has to go through a revolution, right? But there's a big challenge, right? It's very disruptive to what we know today.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, I wonder these days how students will get to actually learn something when every single homework, every single question that they have is going to go through ChatGPT or Gemini or any other AI tool. And I've always wondered, will this dumb us down or dumb the general population down? Because you will become lazy over the long run. You will not think for yourself by outsourcing all the intellectual thinking to those machines. What is your take on that?
Absolutely. I think you're bringing something very realistic. It will dumb us down. So it's a double-edged sword. For some, it will increase their capabilities. For others, it will dumb us down. Let's take an analogy. I love history, how it repeats itself. So if you look when we adopted the smartphone, okay? The smartphone around 2008, massive adoption, early adoption, iPhone innovation. And with the introduction of smartphones, it created two sets of category of people. The ones who adopted it to empower themselves, augment their capabilities, learn on the go, develop new tools, develop their capabilities, increase their intelligence, adopting it properly. And there's the other people who used it as the wrong tool to waste their time on browsing social media, surfing the internet just to crack on, like, you know, funny cat videos is still one of the most viewed videos on YouTube by record high. You see those learning videos are not they don't even get close to those funny cat videos, etc. So it's a double-edged sword. And look at it this way. You know, when we were in high school together, I would call you like on your home landline. I would know your phone number. I would know everybody's phone numbers. My friends, I would know my friends' phone numbers by heart, right? You'd know my phone number. I know your home phone number. I would dial you up. With smartphones, I mean, I don't know your phone number. You don't know my phone number by heart, but you have it on your phone. So that your brain is getting used to less memorizing specific things. Now it's busy with other things, but that's an effect that I'm trying to make an analogy, but that's like, hey, technology you start using in a way that you stop doing other things because you rely on it. And in certain specific key application, yes, Imad, it will dumb down specific set of population, but it will also give opportunity to some to increase in intelligence, provided they know how to execute upon it properly, provided they have access to it. That's another thing that's key in this era.
Okay. Yeah, I see. You've also mentioned before something about security and how important this is going forward. And I wanted to ask you about like a specific question around that. I have read also maybe a couple of months back something about quantum computing and how Google now is doing big advances in this era. Do you think quantum computing is a major threat for security in general on the internet, if used by rogue agents or you know, people who have bad intentions, if they have the access to that technology, can they hack like pretty much everything?
Absolutely. The capabilities that quantum computing will unlock is just with the qubits, it's extremely more powerful than what we know in the binary world that we live in today, which is with the central processing units that process binary, so 0 and 1, and they just do it in a rapid manner, right? With quantum computing is at a different level. Now, provided once we get to the quantum computing application adoption, which is going to take a lot of time, but it's not a matter of if we get there, it's a matter of when we'll get there. It's going to take some time. We will get there. Once we get there, this becomes one of the most powerful, I'm not going to say weapon, but it is classified as some sort of a tool that in the hands of the wrongdoers can cause harm to humanity, and in the hands of the proper and nice doers that could increase humanity quality of life and extra humanity, extraterrestrial intelligence, etc. We're not there yet. But the big corporations you mentioned, Google, Stanford, IBM, Oxford, etc., they're all racing to get there. It's a long moonshot. It's a long-term investment, much longer than AI and AGI, but it's inevitable. We will get there when, I don't know, it's going to take some time. It's complex. It's extremely disruptive to what we know today. You know, earlier I was mentioning like, we were comparing AI to the 2025 AI adoption or era to the dot-com era of 1999. And I said like AI is 10 times stronger impact in terms of velocity and adoption. Quantum computing, I mean, we're talking 1,000 times.
Ooh, it's that disruptive. Okay.
It's that disruptive.
So orders of magnitude higher.
Orders of magnitude that humankind have never seen and can't even imagine, provided we get to the fundamentals we're talking about and they become practical applications. I mean, it's that order of magnitude that's represent extreme risk to the humanity that we know of today if deployed in the hands of the wrongdoers or okay. malicious people. It can break everything we know from security perspective.
All right. Now, going back again to, and maybe we can end on the job part, to the job disruption by AI, do you think going forward, creativity and problem solving and like people who are more strategic in their approach to work are the ones who are really going to kind of gain a bigger impact or let's say a bigger influence in the workplace?
Not necessarily. It'll definitely be a value of creativity and critical thinking. The challenge is, how do you develop this critical thinking if you were born and raised in an era where AI is massively adopted and you're relying on it? Because you start going to be influenced by this AI machine or those large language models. And I can speak from experience. I've been playing with different generative AI services provided by different big corporations. And I started to see some influential capabilities or I wouldn't say intimidation, but creating a persona that within time where you develop this relationship over time, you're going to be impacted by that idealism that that machine has. And for some people, it's good. For some people, it's bad. For some people, they believe it's good or it's bad. But you're being definitely influenced, and they're trying to get you hooked. And it's easy to get hooked. We heard recently in the news somebody developed some romantic relationship with a machine over their physical partner who was sitting next to him, right? So a guy was married to a woman, and the woman was complaining that my husband is no longer in love with me as his wife, his partner in life. He's in love now with this machine. And it made the news and the media. And this is just what we know of. There's so many other things. And to your point, it's all about how are we using it? Are there malicious people or good people? They're always malicious and good people. How are they using it? How are they servicing it to the general public, to which audience, to the younger people who hasn't had time to develop their personal capabilities, society interaction? They become heavily dependent and reliant on this and then heavily influenced. So it's really about AI supremacy is a thing that is scary, but also a great opportunity for the workforce.
Yes, yes, yes. I see. Now, if we shift gears a little bit and talk about the impact of AI on society as a whole and the role of governments. So if we look at AI as a, you know, disruptive power that is currently changing the whole landscape, do you think of it as an inequality? Will it widen inequalities between different classes? Or you think actually on the contrary, it might remove all those obstacles between, you know, different groups of people, and then it will become a great equalizer, let's call it.
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me think about it quickly. Again, we see what the industry, the history has taught us. I think it's going to be a cycle, Ahmad. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be on the short term, it's going to widen for those who have access to this technology, for those who can embrace this technology fast. Yeah. It's going to widen that gap. And we've already seen it, you know, like corporations such as NVIDIA, who holds the core GPU infrastructure, the technology needed, the infrastructure needed to empower these, how they've been gaining domination in our industry and setting themselves for massive success and relevance over the next decades, if not centuries. Yeah. So it's going to, on short term, it's going to widen that. And then probably with same way we saw with the internet, it's going to balance itself for a short period of time before, again, widening, again, thanks to those innovation build on top and the cost associated for it. It's going to be very difficult to have access for this technology. I'll give you an example, and we touched base on it earlier on. If you want to access technology, let's compare it with the .NET, with the .com effect. So yeah. If you wanted to have access to Wikipedia, you just needed internet access at home and a device, and a home device, to get access to that information. Right? .com is the information era. To have access to this information, the companies providing you that service is a minimal cost. Supporting one user to browse that data is minimal cost. It's fractions of cents per month. Nothing. You know, serving 1,000 users or scaling serving Wikipedia to 1 billion, from 1,000 to 10,000 users. So 10x more, fractional increase in cost, nothing. With GPU, with AI, increasing from 10 user to 100 user, only a 10x increase has a drastic increase in that investments. You know, we're talking thousands of dollars, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. scaling to 10,000 users, we're talking hundreds of billions of dollars of investments required to provide that service for everybody. Somebody has to pay for it. It's not going to be always the corporation, you know, the service provider. It's going to be the service consumer. So the consumer, the end user. So now we're saying, if you want to access information on Wikipedia, it doesn't cost you much other than you have your internet access, you have the client device. But if you want to leverage AI to empower, increase your intelligence, well, it's going to cost you a lot of money. And you're going to have to pay for it. That's not accessible to everybody. That's and that for those reasons, I'm saying it's going to widen this inequality, unfortunately, in our world.
In the short term, but then maybe in the long run, as you said, once everybody has more access to this technology, then it might actually equalize.
My biggest concern is that it's a rat race when it comes to AI and GPU. Today, you buy a GPU chipset, the latest from NVIDIA. Quickly, within a year or two, that's going to be so old that you must upgrade to the latest and greatest in order to increase your capabilities. What do you do with this legacy chipset? Let me give you an analogy. Today, the hyperscaler, and you work for Google, you're very familiar with it, they have those cycles of 5-7 years to amortize their hardware, their servers, their commodity x86 servers, or what they call the white boxes. They have cycles of 5-7 years. Once they're end of life, they fully amortize, they're going to resell it on the secondary market, and it goes to other markets where they get repurposed. With AI, those massive adoption, you hear contracts, $100 billion of AI infrastructure purchases, etc. Within 2 years, you wouldn't have 7 years to amortize that equipment. How? You have to get rid of it, and potentially, you eventually would want to get rid of it and acquire the latest and greatest that is way more powerful. What do you do with this legacy $100 billion investment? You must accelerate the amortization to recoup some of your investments, but you have to stay on the cutting edge. So what do you do with that? Okay, you provide it to other places, other locations in the world, but it comes at a cost of knowledge, of data center, of power availability, of cooling capabilities. The things gets heated so much. It's not that straightforward. It's very disruptive to what we know today, and we'll have and new opportunities will arise from that. New opportunities and market opportunities and new jobs will be created to fulfill those supply chains and mechanisms and new rules and regulations from governments, from the EU, from agency will be born.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you touched on the point that I wanted to ask about next. If we want everybody to have access to AI, or let's say if we want AI to benefit everyone, what roles do you think governments and companies should play?
Yeah. I like how you said it's governments and private corporations who's going to come together. They have to come together in order to make it accessible.
I mean, nowadays some companies are stronger than some governments, right?
Absolutely. And that's what we're saying about this AI supremacy. Whoever's going to adopt this will become the next nation. I'll give you an example. What we're seeing in the Middle East, you know, like in Saudi Arabia specifically, even in the UAE, we have this company, Humane, under the great leadership of Tariq Amin, great execution. They're making Saudi Arabia as a new hub of AI, AI supremacy. They're working on making it. They understood that the energy that fuels the economy over the past century was the oil. Right, oil and gas was key component for our industries, and they were one of the massive exporters of oil barrels for the past centuries. They understood that, hey, there's a shift happening in our industry. One of them was the dot-com. Saudi Arabia was not a big player in the dot-com era. And now they understood, let's be a big player. You know, MBS, Visionary, was like, hey, let's... And the royal kingdoms in that era are now playing a new role of like, let's be visionary, let's transform the barrel into AI GPU data center capabilities, because this is the new energy that's going to fuel our economy. So that's the shift they're doing. And to your point, some organizations will become stronger than nations, than countries, than conglomerates of countries. And it's all about, hey, AI supremacy, it's a real thing. Whoever get there first, whoever will be one of the first player in that space will be able to strive from an economic perspective and increase value to their humanity and their citizens.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, when it comes to like access to AI, when if we talk about consumer access, right? So not everybody maybe, or not all societies have the same access to those tools. Probably people in the West have quicker access or wider access to these tools, whereas third world countries, population living there, have probably limited access to these tools, which makes their workflows and their lives way different than what's going to happen here in the West. Do you think, are there like transnational institutions or organizations that look at these things or are starting to monitor these big shifts in how people work and how societies function across the whole of humanity?
Eventually, within time, there will be. Today, every nation is mostly going to be busy with how to empower their government agency, their local citizen with those capability. Right? We're not there yet. We should get there over time. Today, it's all about how to make it accessible to my agencies, to my citizens, to my employees, at what cost they're willing to put the upfront investments. That's what we're seeing happening today, and it's going to be over the next couple of quarters or years as we scale out across the rest of the globe. But we have to make it accessible. At what cost? That it comes down to what cost, who's going to cover that cost, as I explained it earlier. It comes as a recurring cost. Right, every token generation comes at a cost. Who's going to pay for that cost? That is not small. Now, there'll be some innovation to reduce that number, but it's not small. And somebody has to cover that.
Absolutely. Anthony, with the AI revolution, do you see some recurrent or, let's say, worrying ethical concerns, especially when it comes to consumer involvement or societies at large?
Absolutely. Same as the adoption of .NET. If we look at comparison with history with VoIP, voice over IP, it was easy now people to generate numbers, fake numbers, call. You're going to have people who are either very young or very old in our society. Their capabilities are at different level because of either they're young, they don't know much, or they're old, and so we have, from ethical perspective, we have to build responsibly. Okay, this tool, again, it's a double-edged sword. We have to build responsibly. I think there should be more transparency, specifically over the next couple of years as we transition from the world we know today to this new AI standard model, where what I mean by transparency, we should, when this consumer is consuming this a service or a data or information or the content, a video, etc., they should always know if they're interacting with an AI at the back end. Because for those people that I mentioned, the very young, you know, there's a big thing. Bullying is a big thing in the young people and the old people. Money extortions and is very common for the elder people. It shouldn't be like this. So we have to have transparency so that they are aware they're interacting with something fake, that the content they're seeing, the person they're speaking to, the person who is engaging with them is not a backed human person, is completely generated, whether it's with stable diffusion or stable video diffusion for the content, the visual, or the text, or the prompt, the text to speech.
Yes, absolutely. What about data that the AI is using to train, I mean, the data that engineers use to train the AI on. For example, now we, you know, I'm sure you've heard about all those new audio generative AI tools like Suno and others that are creating songs and music. And they look very, very, these, whatever audio is generated or music is that is generated is very similar to famous artists because those models have been trained on actual songs by legitimate artists. And there's now a big backlash in the industry. What do you think about these ethical dilemmas? I mean, there's no more copywriting. I mean, it's very difficult now to really protect your art or your writings or whatever you produce. So what do you have to say about that?
It's going to create a lot of new job opportunities, and the industry will need to, the educational system need to transform to train for these specific new sets of jobs that will arise because of AI. And everybody should see this as new opportunities to embrace and develop skill sets or curriculum in that space and go after that's going to become a new standard job market. It's like, I'll give you an example. If you go back in the 1980s when we adopted the ATM, actually it's a good analogy with the ATM world, with this AI. When we adopted the automatic teller machines, right? You go to banking and now suddenly the machine, back then they were calling it, the super intelligent machine. The same way we're calling the AI or the GPU chipset today. They were afraid of it. Keep in mind, we have to go back and pass like 1970, 75, and then see that, in the 1980, we introduced the ATM teller machine. That's going to disrupt the banking industry. That's going to replace the teller job at the bank teller, because now the machine can give you the money. The machine does not make mistake. It will make it at a rapidity that the humans couldn't do. Every bank will have at least one ATM. Every corner of big city downtown will have one at least one ATM. It was very disruptive. People were afraid of it. And what did it do to the humanity? It changed the ATM teller jobs, transformed it to be more a client relationship building, new jobs created, client customer success manager, right? That's something never existed before. And I'm not even talking about the .com adoption of the e-banking sector. We're like, now I can do everything online through my smartphone. I don't need the bank. No, the bank continued to exist. The teller continued to exist. Today, you go to the bank, there's still somebody, a teller sitting behind a cashier you engage with. And we're talking 1980 is when we introduced and adopted the ATM machine. It's the same effect. Today, 46 years later, still exists. It just transformed. We augmented that person to do different capabilities. We're no longer just going to them, asking them, what's my balance on my account, which was an extremely common task, repetitive cognitive tasks that is transformed by the machine. Same thing will happen with AI.
I mean, your analogy is perfectly applicable in the business or commercial world, but what about artists, for example, or authors who write books, or people who spend like a month or maybe sometimes years trying to compose a symphony? You see what I mean? So these are like purely creative and artistic jobs. And current models are utilizing copyrighted work for the training and generating these new pieces of music or new pieces of writing with just a few prompts. Is there any... I mean, I believe that the ethical dilemma is big here, or like there's obviously an ethical issue here. First of all, the original artist didn't grant permission to those LLMs to use their work as a source for training the data. Second, their jobs now are really threatened, and I don't know how motivated they are to create any new music. They take a long time to create their artistic work, whereas, you know, a young kid now aged 15 or 16 can simply, by using a few prompts, generate a similar piece of work. So these types of dilemmas, or ethical dilemmas, let's call them, are real, right? What do you think is a good way to solve that problem?
I don't know. It's how you described it is true. It's happening as we speak. It's going to be a shift in our industry. It's going to disrupt how we do. How those those gig economy will be drastically disrupted. These copyright models, like we'll see more and more infringement on those copyright intellectual property that were protected under patent, which you're describing now, can easily be overrided. And the worst is difficult to prove that this is related, that thanks to this copyrighted audio track, I was able to create this very famous fully AI generated audio component. It's difficult to prove that correlation, but it's happening here, right? When we look at something, when it takes months and billions of dollars to train a new model and launch it, when OpenAI launches a ChatGPT-4, then later announced ChatGPT-5, that was trained on a larger data set that took months of training and fine-tuning and billions of dollars to train on all that content. It's going to be difficult. And when this same GPT-5 generate a new material audio track, it's going to be very difficult for the end users or even for the professional in the industry to prove that it was generated from this copyrighted material. And it's challenging. We'll have to see more regulations. We'll have to see, as I said earlier, transparency. We need transparency from the government, from the organizations, from the private organization, from those LLM creators, from the scientific industry. But in the early days that we are today, transparency is not something we're going to see because that goes against the supremacy and gaining the market shares, etc. And so it's going to take time, unfortunately. It's going to be very disruptive.
And I mean, my guess is regulation is always late to catch up. With the current state of the models, it'll probably be applicable to the older versions anyway. So, yeah, absolutely, it's going to be an interesting time, but probably not to the advantage of those content creators or those artists or those, producers. They'll have to adapt, correct? I mean, there's nothing that they can do at this stage except adapting. And
they'll have to use this new tool in their favor. Right. Correct. They have to use this tool to empower what they have, and they will be able to do it at a velocity we've never seen before. I'll give you an example, Imad. When you write your song, and by the way, I follow you on YouTube, your music channel. When you create this content, it takes you a while. It takes you, I don't know, weeks, months to come up with a full track that you're going to practice, repeat, rehearse, and then play and publish. Today, you could generate new content that is adapted, refined to your personality or your persona much faster. You will have the ability to launch new content, new music tracks every week if you'd like to. So they should see it as that's the concrete example I'm trying to give, where those artists should see this as a tool to empower their capabilities that's going to transform, but so be in the business. But empower them at a velocity that much bigger, and leverage the economy of scale that you couldn't do by yourself without raising fund and going through scaling through others, etc. That might be a business people would not want to be in, because they won't be in the artistic side of the business and not in the business side of the business, managing people and P&L and all that stuff. So I think they should use it in their favor to empower them to scale and deliver a velocity that they couldn't fulfill alone.
Yes, I understand. Again, it's artists are artists anyway, and some will embrace for sure this new technology. Some probably won't. But in all cases, and maybe we can end on that, at the end of the day, Anthony, what do you believe remains uniquely human within this AI revolution?
Yeah, good question. Let me think about it. That's a very good question. What remains human?
Because at the end of the day, what matters is at the end of us is us, right? This is a tool, a technology that is supposed to empower us, that is supposed to improve our lives, but
or not.
But we constantly hear in the in the media that there are like lots of fears as well linked to AI. So among all this noise, something human has to remain. Some human element has to benefit at the end of the day. And you've mentioned that people are better off embracing AI and leveraging it to their advantage. But also, you've also mentioned that in some cases there will be some misuses, like the example of the person who has now an intimate relationship or serious relationship with a machine at the expense of his relationship with his wife or with human beings. So between all this noise, what do you think is the most important thing that we should keep in mind to make sure that we use AI responsibly and ethically and only reap the benefits without as much getting a negative impact from AI?
Yeah, great question. I think what remains uniquely human in this AI-driven world is that AI doesn't have a soul. Okay? It doesn't have a soul. It doesn't have a purpose in life. You know, when you boot an AI machine, unlike a human being, when they wake up in the morning, they might say, today I want to do this of my day. I want to go get this. I decided that this is AI. When you boot it, it can't just say, oh, today I'm in a different persona. It's going to sit there to take instruction. Now with AGI, agentic general intelligence, we will see some of the objectives or mission statement, but today AI can't want something. You know, they're not going to have this energy of, I want to go get the thing. I want to go fulfill this beyond my scope of work, right? So AI has no soul. AI has no purpose in life, and AI cannot want something. And that's uniquely differentiated with the humans that we hired and employ to work with AI, to develop AI, and in the near future to compete with AI for specific functions. So that intent and wisdom is uniquely human today, and it's going to take a while before start tackling this. And that's what's going to make and keep the humans uniquely positioned in that space. You know, we're not in... You know, when we were young, we used to talk about the Terminator. You know, this is not Skynet.
Like, we're not yet.
Not yet, but Skynet doesn't have the soul, doesn't have this. It was programmed to decide to get rid of humanity in the Terminator movie. But that was the mission, but it didn't have a purpose, a soul, a grit to go do something specific. And it could be used double-edged sword, whether a helper or a hazard. The humanity will decide, the majority of the population will decide how this will be used and adopted in our world.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Anthony, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure having you again on the show. I think we've covered a lot of ground today, and I'm sure listeners will really connect with what we have discussed today. Can you please mention again your social media profiles, or where can people follow you to know more about your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can follow me on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn, where I do a lot of posts on AI and AI infrastructure specifically related to my work. But I also have my GitHub on ASICS, and I have my Hugging Faces, where I publish and train my own dedicated models. So find me on my GitHub and Hugging Faces to know more about the innovation I'm doing that I'm building with those AI and GPU infrastructures.
Awesome. Everyone, be sure to follow Anthony on social media. And thanks again for tuning in. See you next time.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.